Good morning, family. If you would please turn in your Bibles to Numbers, the 12th chapter. Numbers, the 12th chapter. Woodrow Wilson was President of the United States from 1913 to 1921. Now, most historians would rate him one of the better presidents in our nation's history. During his administration, he did things like end child labor in the United States. He advocated for the eight-hour workday. I wonder where that's gone. He won the Nobel Peace Prize for his efforts to bring about the end of World War I, and he took on the powerful monopolies. But before he was President of the United States, he had been a widely respected scholar and served as president of Princeton University. And while at Princeton, he reformed their educational system, but more than that, he eliminated traditional institutions on campus that were class-oriented. He eliminated the institutions that gave the sons and daughters of the privileged elite, the wealthy and the powerful, special status and special rights on campus over against normal people like you and I. He clearly had a populist streak. Because of all of that, in 1948, Princeton decided to name its School of International and Public Affairs after their most celebrated alumni. The Wilson Center, it became. What's ironic about that is just 2 years ago, student activists on Princeton started agitating to have this man with a populist legacy have his name removed from the Wilson Institute and other buildings on campus. And they wanted that done because Wilson was a racist. And he was. He was born a few years before the Civil War began into a slaveholding family in the Deep South. And he never shed his morally repugnant Jim Crow views toward black Americans. Now this morning, I don't want to get into the social justice issues. I don't want to get into the politics of all of that. I'm kind of looking at this more as a historian. And the way we tend to approach people from the past as one-dimensional figures. I mean, without question, the way we tend to teach K through 12 social studies in history sugarcoats our past and whitewashes the flaws of prominent individual Americans in history. The truth is, though, people are complex. We all have our strengths and our weaknesses, our noble attributes and our deep character flaws. And there's a simple reason for that. Pick someone out of history, with the exception of Jesus Christ, and they are a sinner. We're all fallen sinners. And because of that, we ought to study human beings of the past as human beings rather than one-dimensional caricatures. And what's true of figures from United States history is true of people we read about in the Bible as well. Too often we approach the Bible stories and tell them kind of like a melodrama. You know, we've got clear-cut villains like Ahab, boo hiss, and heroes like Elijah, yay! But once again, the reality is that with the exception of Jesus, all of the people we read about in the Bible are sinners. There were many godly men and women, yes, but they were godly people with feet of clay. a figure of speech that actually comes from the Bible. It's taken from Daniel, the second chapter. But I want to focus on one such flawed spiritual leader, Moses, the lawgiver. Now, for the first 40 years of Moses' life, he lived a rather pampered existence in the royal palace of Egypt as the adopted son of Pharaoh's daughter. Then he spent the next 40 years kind of on the lam, hiding out in the wilderness of Sinai as a shepherd. Now, according to Exodus 7:7, Moses was about 80 years old when he had his come to Jesus moment with the burning bush experience in Exodus 3. From that point forward, Moses led the Israelites through the wilderness for 40 years. Now, the words of Moses recorded in the book of Deuteronomy, I know I have you in Numbers chapter 12, but over in Deuteronomy, those were delivered to the children of Israel when Moses was 120 years old and still going strong. Deuteronomy 34:7, his eyes were not weak and his strength was not gone. Consider for a moment all that Moses experienced in his relationship with God the last 40 years of his life. He encountered God in the burning bush. He was God's instrument to bring about the miraculous plagues that brought the Egyptian Empire to its knees. Through the power of God, Moses parted the Red Sea. He was a daily witness to the presence of God through the pillar of fire by night and the cloud by day. Moses benefited personally from the daily provision of manna that God gave Israel. And he personally encountered God on Mount Sinai when he was given the tablets of the law. So in Numbers 12, when Moses' big sister Miriam and older brother Aaron tried to usurp Moses' role as God's appointed leader of the Israelites, here is how God described his relationship with their baby brother Moses. Beginning in verse 6 of Numbers 12. Listen to my words, God speaking. When a prophet of Jehovah is among you, I reveal myself to him in visions. I speak to him in dreams. But this is not true of my servant Moses. He is faithful in all my house. With him I speak face to face, clearly and not in riddles. He sees the form of Jehovah. Clearly, Moses was a giant in the faith. Few people in history have experienced as intimate a relationship with God as Moses did. Few people in history have experienced such an extensive first-hand experience with the power of God as did Moses. And yet, for all of that, Moses was a man with deep flaws. Moses was a godly man with feet of clay. Exodus 32 records that after a literal 40-day mountaintop experience with God, Moses started down Mount Sinai with the Ten Commandments engraved by God on the two stone tablets. Yet as Moses drew near the Israelite camp, he heard a commotion. And then he saw that they had created an idol, a golden calf, and claimed that that golden calf had delivered them from Egypt. In a fit of rage, Moses became the very first person to break all Ten Commandments at once. He threw the tablets down in a fit of rage and shattered them. In Exodus 34, God made Moses carve his own two tablets for replacements and head back up the mountain for another 40 days of no food and no water and write these down 100 times. I will not. No, he didn't do that part. Now here's the thing. according to the information we have in Exodus through Numbers, Moses would have been around 81 years old when he displayed this lack of self-control, when he threw this tantrum. At that point, he'd already performed and witnessed many miracles. He just spent the last 40 days one-on-one with God. Honestly, family, at his age and with his experience, he should have behaved better. Right? Numbers 20. Numbers 20 records a blatant act of disobedience on the part of Moses and his brother Aaron. Now, the Israelites had run out of water in the wilderness. So they whined and bellyached both to Moses and Aaron and about these brothers, saying what incompetent leaders they were and how the Israelites should have never left Egypt. God told Moses to go over to this outcropping of rock and speak to it to bring forth water. Now verses 10 through 12 of Numbers 20 records what happened. Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly together in front of the rock, and Moses said to them, "Listen, you rebels, must we bring you water out of this rock?" Then Moses raised his arm and struck the rock twice with his staff. Water gushed out, and the community and their livestock drank. But the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, "Because you did not trust in me enough to honor me as holy in the sight of the Israelites, you will not bring this community into the land I give them." Moses not only disobeyed God's instructions, he tried to take credit for the miracle. Did you hear what he said to the Israelites? Who did he say was going to provide them with water? He went up to that rock with his brother Aaron and said, "Shall we provide you water?" Who's this "we" character? It wasn't Moses. But he tried to take credit from God. Now here's the kicker. Do you know how old Moses was when he thumbed his nose at God in this incident? Other statements in Numbers chapter 20 and 21 tell us this happened during the very last year of Israel's 40-year journey in the wilderness. What that means is that Moses was 120. He'd been leading Israel for 40 years. A 120-year-old with his knowledge and experience ought to have set a better example, right? Not quite a year later, Moses is gathered on the plains of outside of Jericho, across the Jordan River with Israel. He takes that time to remind them of all that God had commanded them to do, all that God had done for them over the last 40 years. And he was encouraging them to stay faithful to God. That is pretty much what the book of Deuteronomy is all about. It's a book of reminding. And yet, even as Moses' life is drawing to a close, even as he's pleading with Israel to stay faithful to God, Moses shows his feet of clay yet again. Now, if you'll go over to Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 37, several times in the first four chapters of Deuteronomy, Moses brings up how the Israelites, or brings up with the Israelites, how God was angry with Moses over that whole water incident less than a year before. Chapter 1, verse 37. Moses speaking to the Israelites. And We've already read Numbers 20. We know how it really went down, right? Moses says, because of you, the Lord became angry with me also and said, you shall not enter the promised land. Whose fault did Moses say it was? Theirs, not his. Chapter 3, verse 26. We looked at this passage a couple weeks ago. Moses had been praying to God that God would change his mind and let Moses enter the promised land. But as we learned a few weeks ago, God told Moses no. Now in chapter 3, verse 26, here's how Moses explained the results of that prayer to the Israelites. Because of you, the Lord was angry with me and would not listen to me. Whose fault did Moses more than imply it was that God told him no? He said it was theirs, not his. Chapter 4, verses 21 through 22. There Moses says again to the Israelites, the Lord was angry with me because of you. And he solemnly swore that I would not cross the Jordan and enter the good land the Lord your God is giving you as your inheritance. I will die in this land. I will not cross the Jordan, but you are going to cross over and take possession of that good land. There's a lot of I versus you's in here. But once more, where did Moses lay the blame for God getting mad at him? Squarely at the feet of the Israelites, because of you. He's sounding like a broken record to me. I mean, the way Moses keeps bringing this issue up, because of you, because of you, because of you. That sounds like whining. That sounds like sour grapes. Especially this last time in chapter 4 when he says, because of y'all, I can't cross over. I'll die here in the sticks. I can't cross the Jordan, but you get to. It also sure sounds to me like Moses keeps shifting the blame instead of taking personal responsibility for his own actions. There was not a single Israelite in Numbers 20 who told Moses, hey, don't talk to the rock, hit it good. Nobody forced Moses to smack that rock instead of talk to it like God said to. He did that all on his own, and he did it because he was mad. He was mad at the Israelites. They're just getting a little too big for his britches. Shall my brother Aaron and I give you water? Really? This was all about Moses losing his temper. And at his age, 120. Come on now. Grow up. He's 120, but he's not senile. So we can't blame any of this on a senior moment. He's in good health. The Bible said so. He spent 40 years in an intimate relationship with God. He's been a conduit for God's power and blessings to others. And he knows he's about to shuffle off this mortal coil. He's about to die and meet his Maker in the final way, and yet he still can't seem to stop himself from showing some pettiness and bitterness and generally bad form. Again, a 120-year-old spiritual leader with Moses' resume ought to know better. Ought to set a better example. But Moses wasn't just a leader. He was this messy thing we call a human being. He was a sinner. And because of that, family, there is no reason for us to go around tearing down statues of Moses and petitioning to have his name removed from the Hall of Faith in Hebrews 11. We just don't need to do that. Instead, Moses' example ought to cause us to engage in some sober reflection. Moses' example ought to cause us to take a good, hard, honest look at ourselves and notice our own feet of clay and see all the mud that we each track through our own spiritual houses. And maybe if we look back at the trail of muck we've left behind, we might be humble enough to cut others some slack for the trail of muck they're leaving behind. I mean, think of the irony of that. Here you come with your own feet of clay, you know, squish, 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 squish. Look at that trail behind you. But here comes someone else. Why, it's Bob Amy. This is what you get for sitting up close. Squish, 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 squish. Bob, what are you doing? And at your age, you ought to know that you should have wiped your feet before you came in there. And Mom's going, really? What's that behind you? Well, my clay's good clay. It's premium stuff. I didn't go just into any old mud puddle. No, no, no. I went to the high-grade mud. So, see, it's okay that way. It ought to cause us not to excuse immoral behavior, but to cut each other some slack. I don't know how many of you picked up a bulletin this morning, but on the front page, down the left-hand column, is a list of names. It's got the elders, the preacher thing, the deacons and ministry leaders. Do you know what that list is? It's just a partial list of the sinners who make up this church family. That's what that list is. Every one of the names on the left side of your front page bulletin, every one of them has feet of clay. And frankly, their resumes aren't near as impressive as Moses was. If you go out in the foyer, and you don't need to do this right now, but to the right there, there's this picture board. And on that picture board are photographs, how's that for ironic? Photographs on a picture board of many of the children and women and men who make up this church family. Do you know what that picture board is? Just photographs of all the sinners that are a part of this church family. You can look all up and down that picture board if you want. Go through the directory for those who avoided getting their pictures taken and see the other names. And I can guarantee you one thing. You will not find a single perfect person listed. We don't even have someone who comes close. And you're thinking, excuse me, my mama does. Well, I'm not going to get into that with you, but you're looking at your mama through rose-colored glasses. She's not even close either. Again, take a good, hard, honest look at your own feet of clay before criticizing any of your brothers and sisters for their muddy feet. There's one last observation I want to make regarding Moses. Personally, I'm grateful that God deliberately had Moses preserved in the Scriptures, warts and all, muddy feet and all. One of the reasons I'm grateful for that is there isn't a week that goes by when I don't cry out to God about my own failures and my own shortcomings as a Christian. I groan to God about what a disappointment I must be to Him. And at my age. When I express my frustration to God that surely at my age, with my knowledge, with my experience, I ought to be a better Christian than I am, and I ought to make far fewer mistakes than I do. At least that's the conversations I have with God. Now, if you stare long and hard at your feet of clay, and I mean just kind of focus on them to the exclusion of everything else, you get pretty discouraged. Pretty disgusted with yourself. Especially when you discover that you can't get rid of the clay yourself. You can't wash it off. You just spread it around. That's when I'm grateful for Moses. Because I'm not even close to 120. I've not personally witnessed the many demonstrations of the power of God that Moses witnessed. And so when I look at Moses and see how God stayed with him down through the years in spite of his antics, I see the grace of God. And I see the grace of God in Moses' life. And when I see the grace of God operating on someone like Moses, it gives me hope. And it makes me think there's not only hope for me, but there's hope for all who have feet of clay. I encourage you, family, to go back and examine these passages in the days ahead, as well as examine your feet. Reflect on these things. Think about these things. May it humble you, but may it also help you appreciate all the more the grace of God in your life and in the lives of others. And to wonder at the God who, knowing we struggle with these kinds of things, would not sugarcoat His people. Would not whitewash the men and women who served Him down through the centuries, but purposely had them preserved, clay feet and all. To encourage us and humble us. Thank you for listening, family. We come to a time in our service that we set aside for sharing. Maybe you need prayers of strength. prayers of encouragement, prayers of direction. Maybe you want to know more about this God who would love to take you to Him and wash your feet of clay. Love you in spite of your many flaws. And you want to know how to come into a saving relationship with your Creator God. We're on that journey with you, and we would be happy to open up the Scriptures with you and let God's Scriptures show you how to come into that saving relationship. Maybe you're already ready to do that, and the water's ready behind me in the baptistry. Where we come into contact with the blood of Christ and He cleanses us from all sins. He rises to walk in newness of life. Whatever your need is, we invite you to make it known. We're going to stand and sing. And you can either make your way down here to one of these front rows, and one of our shepherds will visit with you and share what you want shared with the congregation and pray over you. Or if this is just too public, you can go out these double doors, head all the way down the hallway, then to the left and right, there's just signs that say Shepherd's Prayer Room. Head on down there, and one or two of our shepherds will be down there to pray with you in private, if that's what you prefer. If you have any need, we invite you to make it known and take advantage of the opportunity as we stand and sing.
I bring my sense to Thee, the sense I cannot count.